and welcome to The Life of an Entrepreneur. I'm J.M. McCarthy with Entrepreneurial Voice, and we are broadcasting live from skidrowstudios.com, Real Radio on the Internet, and we're here every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we're here to talk about what it's like to be an entrepreneur, explore the life of the entrepreneur, find out some business practices and just business tips and what an entrepreneur goes through in their everyday life. So if you have any questions and you'd like to talk to us, please give us a call at 1-800-893-9562 and let us know what you're thinking and what you want to know. And today I'm very excited. I'm interviewing Bao Vo. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
So welcome. And we're going to find out everything about Bao and what you do. So welcome to the show. And
Thank you.
Let's start off with tell me who you are and what you do.
Sure. You got my name right.
Good.
Well, it's lovely to meet you. So I guess I am here because I currently have an online store, like an e-commerce website called juicykits.com. And we basically sell do-it-yourself kits for to let people make their own succulent terrariums.
And look at this gorgeous terrarium that Bao brought me today.
So that's one of our products called the Sideways. We basically send everybody all of the pieces that they need to build their own terrarium, including the plants that they want to add to it. So they get to choose the plants.
I'm going to show this again just so everybody can get a look at it. It's beautiful, beautiful.
Cool. So we're approaching our second year in business, and before that I was doing a lot of creative design entertainment work.
Now, you're a multi-serial entrepreneur too, though, because you do other things as well. You write music, you produce music. You've just got all kinds of talents going. So how did you evolve? How did you get started in all of this? And I understand, too, that, you know, you can take us back because you came over from Vietnam with your single mom in 1985.
Yeah. So we immigrated from Vietnam. And I guess there wasn't, you know, a lot of money for me to have recreational activities. So I guess one of the things that I found as a way of expression was art, you know, drawing or building little things out of whatever we found around. And I think that really sparked something within me. So, you know, for the rest of my life, I've been just doing business-related stuff, but in the creative fields. So, you know, there's an opportunity anywhere as long as you're creative. And that's how I feel about pretty much everything from cooking to friendship to business.
Oh, I like that philosophy. That's really good, and it really is true. That's a great business lesson. So you were dabbling in art and drawing, and did you have visions? I don't know how old you were in 1985, and not that you have to disclose your age here, but were you young enough to be kind of thinking about a career, or were you thinking, oh, this is what maybe I'll do when I grow up? Or
yeah, you know. As a really youngster, I didn't know what you could do with creative skills or artistic skills. And my mom actually said, maybe you can be an architect or something. And I was like, oh, cool. Or like a cartographer.
A what? What is that?
Somebody who makes maps.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that was interesting for a little bit. But as I grew up a little bit, like in high school, I began to create, you know, more like fine arts and build larger sculptures and installations. And honestly, when I was a high school senior, I thought I'd be a big art star by the time I was 30-something. I think what drove me to go do other things was the opportunity to connect with regular people. I found that fine art was a little bit enclosed in its own environment.
Mm-hmm.
So design and business allowed me to do things that affected, you know, everybody.
So you went to school to study art, correct?
I did, yes.
And when you finished school, and I assume that it sounds like your mom fostered this creativity within you. And I love that you had that opportunity to explore. And so when you graduated from school, what did you do?
So I went to the Art Center College of Design, and I studied environmental design, which is product design and architecture combined, interior design almost.
Oh, okay.
And once I got out, I found that I was actually pretty good at presenting an idea and taking a small idea and turning it into something that I'm able to communicate. So I went to work for, you know, various design marketing ad agencies as an art director or a design person. And eventually I joined a small agency and helped them grow from about 7 people to 45 people.
It's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was a great learning experience. And I definitely took everything I learned there to go, you know, do a lot of my own things now, where somebody could be joking at the dinner table about a new product idea or a new brand campaign. And, you know, we can take that and spin it into something tangible.
Fantastic. Well, I that's one of the things that I like to share with entrepreneurs is to recognize that sometimes, even if you don't start on that path right away of entrepreneurship, that working with someone, you learn things from everything you do, whether it's when you were putting together those things as a child, or whether it is working for someone and just learning what it takes to manage someone or present your ideas to someone. All of those skills are very, very effective in going out on your own. So you worked for this company. You helped it to grow many times over and was very successful. But you obviously weren't happy because you left and went off and did your own thing.
Yeah, you know, I had a really great time there. Worked with some awesome people. But I think the entire time within me, I kind of didn't realize I was really driven to do something that I own that came out of me that I would be able to shape as my own product or as my own kind of child.
Right.
And that's kind of where the music has become a lot of my focus, because you create a song and it impacts somebody in a certain way. That is, I found that to be a lot more rewarding than to design a successful campaign that made a lot of money.
Right.
And I guess same with JuicyKits.com right now in my store, where, you know, we're allowing other people to use our products to make their own thing. And that's so much... That's really, really rewarding, because that was an idea that came out of my friends and I, you know, just bouncing around and saying, why do we make stuff for people instead of enabling people to be creative and have the same joy that we're having?
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Now, did you study music growing up, or are you just naturally musically talented?
I kind of suck at every instrument, but I did not ever learn anything classically. I'm kind of one of those figure it out yourself type of guys.
Wow.
And I consider myself more of a songwriter. I mean, I've been really, really infatuated with pop music from, you know, the various decades till now, and what makes a pop song hook you, right? And what makes a pop song memorable and makes you enthusiastic about it, blah, blah, blah.
Wow, that's interesting, because most people, when you think about some of the songs, I mean, you don't really take, especially like a songwriter, sometimes they're kind of pouring their heart out, is the way I imagine it. They're just pouring their heart out about something that really struck them, kind of like writing a really fine story.
Sure.
And that's quite a talent to have, to be able to not only do that, but then to be able to also look at the other side of it, and how do I market this? How do I make this memorable, like you said? How do I have it be that tune that sticks in somebody's ear and they can't stop singing it over and over and over again?
Yeah, and there's a 100% parallel with a pop song and a business or a product. You know, it's something that you've got to love, and it's got to be awesome and unique and everything. But you've also have to have the skills to make it desirable and to make it compact enough to be digestible, and to manage it well, basically.
Fantastic. So what was there this aha moment that you're working and you're going, and then you just went, okay, this is it. This is, I'm ready to go. How did you know you were ready to fly the nest?
Oh, I think it's kind of a deep story, but I had this band called Ming and Ping with twin brothers, Ming and Ping, and I was their producer, a co-writer.
And you were just kind of doing that on the side, or is this part of your business?
I had started that during during college, during art school. And we had, you know, carried it along for the past decade or so. And there was a moment where I received an email from the best friend of one of the firefighters who passed away in Arizona a couple of years ago in that big fire. And all of us were just like speechless, because it was basically like, you know, we spent summers listening to your songs and you don't really understand how much a song can impact somebody or some people's relationship, you know?
Wow, that's and, touching.
So at that point we were like, let's just do this. Like, what more rewarding feeling can there be other than, you know, creating something that came out of you and having it become its own living, breathing thing that affects other people.
Now, were you involved in writing some of the songs for Ming and Ping as well as producing?
Yeah, so I helped co-write quite a few of the songs, and I basically have produced all of the Ming and Ping records since we started.
So you started this band when you're in school, but you don't play any instrument, really. that's kind of, I'm trying to think of a really good word for that, but that's courageous in a way. I mean, to say, hey, I really want to do music, but I can't play anything. But I think maybe let me take a stab at writing something. Can you, so you write the words and then they put the score to it, or did you figure out how to do the score as well? Or
yeah, we do everything collaboratively. And, you know, like I said, I don't play anything well. I mean, I stink at everything musical instrument wise. But, you know, we get enough to get a record done.
You obviously have an ear.
And yeah, you know, if you can hear it, you can ask someone to help you do it, or it's pretty much like starting a business, right? If you can't do bookkeeping.
Yeah, you ask somebody else. But, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs fall into the thing of, I have to do it myself. I can't afford to hire somebody else. And then maybe they do it badly and they spend all of this time focusing on on things. There are books that are written about asking.
100% guilty. So it takes a huge leap of faith to entrust somebody with your baby. And sometimes it's not really about, you know, money or time. It's about, is this the right person to kind of have by your side at, you know, certain moments? And I think that's a skill that you have to learn. Nobody's going to do something exactly the way you would do it.
Right.
But if you're willing to take a little bit of time to see the other people the way that they do things and then try to find an in-between, I think that works out the best. Because if you are an entrepreneur, your time is probably best spent scheming and being devious and being being creative and smart and taking chances. And I think one of the things that I've learned is the more you can offload, you know, various tasks to other people, the happier and more productive you're going to be.
Right. I agree with that. I think that's very important. And if you're spending your time trying to figure out how to be a bookkeeper when that's not your strong suit and not something you're interested in, we know that when we're working around something that we don't really care about, that we kind of procrastinate and maybe move papers around a bit and, you know, get off task and start thinking about another new idea and all of that. So if we can offload those things that I agree that aren't serving us well, that's a very important step to being successful and even growing your company. So you're not wasting your time down in the trenches. So
yeah, and that's as worthwhile of an investment as, say, your first big inventory purchase or, you know, your first advertising spend.
Right. So what I want to know more about, because this started organically and that's okay. You know, that's great because it's not like, oh, let's go out and do this and it's going to be a business. And then there's all that pressure. So you kind of just started it maybe in the garage or kind of thing. So it was organic and you made mistakes, but so what? You tried things out, some mm-hmm. worked, some didn't. You made some calls, you got lucky occasionally, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But at some point you say, okay, this is more than just a boy band that we've got going here. We've really got something and it's can be a serious thing. So did you take those steps to make it legal? Did you take those steps to protect each of you so that you each get credit for what you all put into this business? How did you go about doing that? And did you have, how did you know to do that? Did you have an advisor or someone who told you, oh, you know what, this is what you better do?
For the music thing, I was really lucky that I had a couple of mentors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've met a few really nice people too. Kind of point me in the right direction as far as making things official, protecting yourself, officially documenting things, copywriting music, obviously, things like that. For the JuicyKits.com business, it really did evolve organically. It was me and my former girlfriend making some terrariums, and then somebody made a joke about you should sell these. And we're like, no, we're not going to spend our lives making these things, selling it to people. But we'll send them stuff. They can make it. And so that was, you know, that really did come out of somebody making a joke. And when I was in design school, there was one business class, basically, taught by a man called Errol Gerson. And it was optional. So if you're in school... right now, find those business classes and take them. I mean, because unless you're in business school, I think that was invaluable in that, you know, I grew up as a creative person and I was educated as a creative person, but I don't think that I would have been able to do a lot of the stuff that I've done unless I was, you know, a little bit kind of was exposed to some of the official things that you've got to do business-wise to get mm-hmm. something moving. So, you know, being able to get a business license or file for a DBA or...
copyright your songs or even put something online with e-commerce and...
or if you're working collaboratively with a partner to have something mm-hmm. on paper to say, you know, this is what I'm contributing and this is what we're... each of us are entitled to, you know, and that's kind of something you don't think about when things evolve organically.
And especially when you're friends.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think that without a tiny bit of business knowledge, I don't think I would have had the impetus to go and do some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I was really lucky in that, you know, I had a sense that I should maybe peek into this class and see what it was about.
I think that's great. I wish that more of the artistic, creative schools and programs kind of required that. And I know that a lot of students, because I taught entrepreneurship, and I know that a lot of the students, they didn't really necessarily think about the fact that maybe one day this would be really helpful for them to know mm-hmm. how to write a business plan or how to run a business kind of thing. But it is some critical information that can help you, even if you work for someone, just kind of understanding where they came from, where they started, and how they got their business going. So I love that the idea just started like, oh, we're making terrariums. Maybe we could sell these. And how can we do it so we don't have to do all the work and allow people to be creative too?
Yeah, I think that was a big thing for me. It was like more so enabling other people to be creative than... you know, for us to sell something for money.
So what do you think is the difference between you and other people? Because people make jokes like that about a million different things all day long. But you took action on it. So What do you think propelled you to take that action and decide what went into the decision to put it online, to send out these different kits, have people pick and choose what they want for, and that's juicykits.com, right?
Juicykits.com. So juicy for succulents and kits for do-it-yourself kits.
Okay, right? So if they want to go look at that online, they can.
Yeah, go ahead. So to answer your question, I think I've always been really driven to do my own thing. I find that I get a lot of reward out of fulfilling my own ideas and making them tangible. So, you know, even working for other people and having a really great workplace and stuff, I think that every opportunity that revealed itself, you know, I said, could I make this something that I can own and run and you know, find a sense of reward from? So I'm always kind of looking for that even now, you know, what's the next opportunity for me to own something and really bring it up like a child?
Well, excuse me, there's a lot that goes into it too, because it's one thing to go buy a few succulents and find a nice container to put it in and make it yourself. And it's a whole nother ball game of packaging, mm-hmm. of mailing. I mean, there's the high cost of mailing. Mm-hmm. There's making sure that the plants arrive alive, although succulents have kind of like 9 lives, or
yeah.
They can kind of live forever in adverse conditions. I know, because I'm not very good with plants, but I seem to sometimes keep these alive, and that's kind of cool. So I like succulents for that reason. But there was a lot to go into that. Now, do you have partners in this business?
You know,
or is it all you?
It's just me. I have a few helpers,
mm-hmm.
but I think that's where my design education came into play. And, you know, just creative problem solving at the core of it, but also being able to know how to source materials or how to contact printers and all of these things, stuff you learn in design school. So that really came in handy. I didn't really think that it would translate so directly, but it did.
Yeah. Now, how long have you had Juicy Kits?
Juicy Kits is going to be 2 years old in 2 months.
Wow.
Yeah, well,
almost,
really cool.
Almost happy birthday, right?
Thanks.
And have you expanded from what your first vision was? Did you write a business plan?
Yeah, so our first vision was very basic. Basically, you know, just a couple of products for a certain target demographic and mainly just a few small do-it-yourself kits. And I've been fortunate enough to, you know, been able to have coffee and lunch with really, really smart people who kind of stoked a few more fires and allowed me to think a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as offering, you know, more kind of larger scale offerings, such as like bulk kits for weddings or corporate gifts, or even offering accessories that I wouldn't have imagined having to inventory at the moment. And, you know, a few other top secret things that I can't really review.
That's okay. You don't have to share all of your secrets, but you do bring up important points about having that environment.
Yes.
Where you're able to think bigger and maybe bounce ideas off of others and just being able to look at it from a different standpoint instead of just sometimes our own tunnel vision of going down that path and thinking, oh, well, two types are fine.
sure.
And what is it that other people might take from this and enjoy being able to, other ways they might want to create and personalize their own terrarium?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's the consumer-facing side.
Mm-hmm.
Internally, operationally, we've vastly improved. And, you know, that was with the help of some really, really smart friends of mine who saw opportunities to optimize certain processes or, you know, renegotiate certain deals with our vendors, things
right.
like that. And most of us think we're, like, super smart people who start businesses. But you sit in a room with these other people, this environment, this, you know, really creative business entrepreneurial environment, and you're like, holy cow, man, these guys pull stuff out of, like, nowhere. Where do you even get this stuff? And it's, like, just so inspiring to be around that sort of, you know, always-on brain.
I agree. I mean, I hang around with some really amazing people, and I'm just always fascinated by how they come up with things that they do. And I also agree, and this is not my strong suit, but I feel like systems are really just the key. It's incredible to have systems in place and to recognize that there are that certain things are negotiable, or that, you know, make that decision. Should we carry inventory or should we not? Or have it drop shipped? Or, you know, what are all of those decisions and really thinking about them?
Sure. And I think another point is the ability to say, whoops, that was the wrong turn. Let's back up a little bit and try it a different way.
Absolutely. Because as much as I've found entrepreneurs are risk takers, and you need to be to a certain extent, or you'll just kind of stay stagnant where you are, failure sometimes hits hard. And if you find that maybe that wasn't the best method, that it's hard to kind of let go. Now, do you feel, I don't know if you work with women or not,
mm-hmm.
But do you feel that you and the women work differently? Because sometimes, certainly, entrepreneurial speak is that your business is like your baby, and it's kind of thought that women tend to be less likely to let something go, even if it's not working, because they tend by nature to be fixers and nurturers. Do you see a difference? Are you willing to just cut the baby's arm off? And
I don't see a difference, actually. It really depends on the person. I feel like a lot of men are the same way.
Okay.
And I think it's where you come from that makes you more willing to re-navigate, I guess, or re-optimize your path. And I think it's a skill as well. You've got to learn it. You've got to do it a few times. So there's always that fear of like, oh man, I've already invested all this whatever into this. So
yeah, but do you want to keep throwing good money after bad kind of thing? What's the biggest failure that you've had?
The biggest failure that I've had. I don't know. I think that everything I've done is kind of like equally successful and equally a failure. And I've just taken everything that I've learned from things that I've invested in that didn't pan out and considered that a success, because I took so much learning experience from it.
Oh, that's such a great philosophy. I like that. And that's sort of what I actually kind of answered the question in the, like there's a right or wrong way, but just the fact that it's almost like it's not failures. It's just a constant learning experience. You learn from your successes as much as you learn from your failures, so to speak. And the failures are successes, and the successes can be failures.
Yeah.
If you don't take a moment to kind of stop and review them and say, okay, well, if I just keep doing this and I won't stay successful, I have to be able to grow and pivot and re-navigate and change with the market and do all of those things.
Yeah, and I feel like if you do have a success, like something that somebody traditionally considers a success, the reward is a lot more instant, a lot more, you know, visible. If you have something that somebody considers a failure, it takes a little bit longer to realize, oh, wow, this is what I got out of that, like, really tumultuous experience. Like, this mm-hmm. this is also equally valuable, you know, but it takes a little bit to realize that because you're still, like, in pain.
Right, but it can definitely open up a different door and send you in a different direction.
Yeah, and I really like what you said about if you don't take stock of your successes also, you're not going to be able to grow appropriately or pivot, you know. You'll just kind of repeat yourself and become outdated.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like reaching the top of the mountain. That's okay. So you did that. It might have been really damn hard, but you got there. But now what's next? And how are you going to, and what do you take from that experience? You know, what would you have done differently? Mm-hmm. Do you look back and say, what would I have done differently?
Yes. You know, well, can I tell a personal story?
Sure, you can tell anything you want. This is the life of an entrepreneur, and I think that's what's really helpful is when you share kind of really who you are and how you got cool. to where you are.
Well, as a 19-year-old or a 20, 21-year-old, there's nothing in the education system that teaches you about credit, mm-hmm. free money. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the biggest holes that I dug myself into is, you know, I was younger. I wanted to fund a lot of creative projects. And, oh, here's somebody who's going to loan me free money, right?
Right.
And we aren't educated on how that works at a younger age. And I think we should be because had I been a little more informed, I would have, you know, had been a little more responsible as far as using that source of income. So, so I think that was one of the things that was really scary for a little bit. I was like, oh, wow, all of a sudden, like, I've done a lot of cool stuff, but I also have this, like, huge, huge debt. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just hunker down and pay this off, you know. And so, some people don't get to realize or get an opportunity to fix that before it's a little bit too deep, you know. So I think that as a youngster, I think maybe we should advocate teaching something like that.
I think that's a great idea. And I think that there's been so, you're not the only one. Who because I know that, you know, the credit card companies went into the colleges and they did kind of lure everybody in. I mean, you get a T-shirt and you get this and you get that. And a lot of kids ended up with a lot of debt. It sounds like you didn't go out and go shopping. You funded several projects that may or may not have worked. Mm-hmm. And not that some entrepreneurs haven't said, you know, this very, very, very successful project would have never gotten off the ground if I hadn't had a credit card that I could have
sure.
for short-term money. But there's also, that's a huge risk as well. And I think that a lot of people don't understand what can happen when they do that. And so I agree with you. It would be great if this kind of information, business information, even in the high schools, I know I've actually taught some entrepreneurship classes through Junior Achievement in the high schools, but I think it's great when kids are exposed to this information about better financial information and how to handle yourself and build credit and really the purpose of a credit card and how it can help you, but how it can also destroy you.
Yeah, just basic information about the mechanics of how credit works. And, you know, that is that's such a big gap in our general knowledge.
Yeah, but even grown-ups, you know, get into this as well, obviously. And so if you are looking to launch this creative idea that you have, looking at that financial piece and how you might fund that project and what is really the best way to fund that project. And sometimes maybe it is you taking on that debt, but other times mm-hmm. maybe it's using someone else's money or finding a better way to get the money, even if it's bootstrapping, which many many of us have done and have to do, and even realizing that you and I both spoke about having someone else come in and do the things that you are not good at. But I want to add to that that it doesn't necessarily mean going out and spending a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You can do trades. You can get creative. And every entrepreneur is creative, or should be.
Yeah, I think that if you're passionate and really, really excited about whatever project you're working on, mm-hmm. People will see that. And they will be willing to be creative with you as far as, you know, compensation or how things will work itself out. I think a lot of people are too afraid to ask most mm-hmm. of the time. Like I said, one of my mentors previously in my music career was just like, the most important thing you can do is ask. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, can you get me a publishing deal? Done. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. And you never know who out there who knows somebody that is the exact person that you need to meet and get in contact with. And if you don't let people know, a lot of times too, don't you think that people, they feel like they've got this kind of secret and they guard it and they don't want to let anything out. And they're so afraid if they do that someone's going to steal what they have.
Yeah, I think that if you are doing something great and fantastic and the way that you're going to do it, I think you should just go full force. And you know, of course, there's going to be like some trade secrets you don't want
right.
to let out. But I think that fear of letting people know what you're doing is detrimental. Because no one's going to be able to do what you're doing the way that you're doing it.
And you're not an island in doing it all by yourself. So like you said, you know, finding someone who can, hey, can you publish this? Can you produce this? You know, those kind of connections can be paramount to your success and to making it actually happen.
Yeah, I think sometimes we think someone is a competitor, but you often end up, you know, teaming up with some of those exact people. So, like I said, if you're really stoked on your idea, people are going to help you. Like, they just sense it. They want to be a part of success, or, you know, they want to be. It's also as thrilling for other people to help. To help someone.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. How do you figure out what you're going to do each day? Because you've got all of these things going. You've got your hands in a lot of different pots. I mean, it's not like, oh, well, if somebody orders a terrarium kit that I'm going to go in and put that together and send it out and then I'll get on with my other business. If you want that business to grow, you have to constantly be thinking about that. So how do you kind of organize your time?
I have learned to become a little more disciplined as far as scheduling my time. So on Juicy Kids, I actually work, I guess, every day for at least 6 to 8 hours. And then I block another 6 to 8 hours on music stuff. So, you know, in between getting food, I have a set period of time or a set amount of time where I'm working on certain things. So that's actually one of the best things about being an entrepreneur is that you kind of have a little bit more freedom.
You can work 24/7 if you want to.
Yeah, or you have freedom to do this at like 4 in the morning if you wanted to, because you're doing other stuff at 4 in the afternoon, you know. And that freedom is one of the most rewarding things I found about trying to pursue my own things. The ability to say, oh, I'm going to go to Mexico tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you kind of have to learn that discipline to say these things need to get done. And even if you have an extra 2 hours where you could be, you know, surfing the internet or whatever, that those 2 hours could be spent developing something new or making something better. So you've got to make your work hours, right? I'm not done with work yet. I'm going to figure out how I can optimize this other thing because I do have this extra time.
Mm-hmm. I like that. What was it through trial and error that you decided that you wanted to be more disciplined in that area? I mean, finding that you weren't getting the things done, or how did you come to that conclusion?
I don't know if I have a special skill or not, but I think one of the things that I feel like I do very well is to recognize what I'm not doing good enough. So, for example, I wasn't a very good presenter. And so, you know, I set out to learn how to present and organize my thoughts before I step up in front of people. And over time, I did, like you said, trial and error, realize that, oh man, my time management is a mess. Like, I could be doing 32 things at once, but get nothing done all day. So that was just something that I don't read. But that was something that I actually, like, sat down and tried to find things to read about. You know, how can I optimize my time? How can I organize my life so that I'm not so scatterbrained, right? We have all these devices that want to pull us this way and that way. And,
oh, I know.
And, like, just as a real-life example, like a not-business example, setting your phone aside during dinner with somebody changed my life. And that didn't really materialize until, you know, 3-4 years into, like, smartphone life. And you're finally like, man, I'm not getting any satisfaction out of either the phone or dinner with this my friends, you know, because everyone's on their phones. So being able to focus on what's relevant at the moment is something that I've really, 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 actually just recently, really tried to impose on my own life as a way of keeping myself both productive and giving myself the opportunity to reap the benefits of, you know, my own freedom or my own, all of this work that I'm putting in.
Now, you've mentioned that you love the opportunity to take off to Mexico tomorrow if that's what you wanted to do. but it sounds like you totally also really love what it is that you're doing. And so constantly working is really fun. But how do you keep yourself from getting burned out? Because that's a lot of hours that you put in every day. And what do you do to regenerate your creative juices?
Let's start big and then go small. So big is I've promised myself that I need to take at least 2 or 3 weeks off a year and go someplace that's not my normal stomping grounds. So, you know, get out of town, basically, for a few weeks. That has really helped in the past couple of years. I guess medium scale is that when I'm working on music, it's physically, it's like it requires you to be there and you're like at work, but it's really fun. It's like, do you ski or anything?
I do, yeah. A little bit.
I feel like when you get in and you're trying to work on a song, it's kind of like you're just tipping over the slope and you have all these plans, but then you're completely on your toes in that things pop up out of nowhere. You've got to navigate at a split second. And that's really, really fun to me. So when I'm doing music at the end of the day, I don't feel like I'm working at all. Mm-hmm. I feel like, ooh, it's playtime. Let's create something. And then at the end of the day, be like, wow, that's awesome. I just, you know, created something. And the process was fun, but the product is also really fun.
So I paint, so I understand. I'm an artist, so I understand that feeling, because I can get totally lost in it.
Yeah,
sometimes you run up against problems. And
Then on the small scale is people. I have a small group of people that I really value and treasure. And, you know, if there's any free moment for me to spend with them, then I do my best to have the most human interaction as possible. And, you know, just 15 minutes talking with somebody you really like or you love is why you're doing all of this in the first place, right? And so those three things, I think, really, really, really keep me sane. And I've been extremely happy for the past, you know, whatever year, 2 years of working through the hard part of some of this new business. And now finally being able to afford a little bit of free time. And then how you use that free time is friends, people you love, family, that human connection that you get completely disconnected to if you have like a hardcore job that you go to every day or you commute really far for your job. So bringing some of that back, just putting the phone aside during dinner or turning it off, putting it on silent, and really, really savoring that human connection.
Those are great words of advice. I've gotten caught up in everything you've been saying, and I forgot to remind our listeners that if they want to call in, they can. 1-800-893-9562. We'd love to hear from you. We have a few minutes left, and if you'd want to call in and let us hear from you, that'd be great. So going back to that relaxation time, and I'm going to try, well, I think I do pretty good at dinner, but I'm going to try to be more conscious of that and putting my phone aside. What are the things that you like to do? So I assume you like maybe going and listening to music, concerts, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I like to cook. That's really, really nice. What's more rewarding than, you know, having somebody that you enjoy sharing a meal with you, eating something good? And I do like to eat out. I'm in love with downtown LA.
Me too.
I've been around for, I guess, 7 years now. And what's really inspiring to me is seeing like new restaurants and new businesses come up in challenging spaces, because mm-hmm. we do have these old buildings and we need to innovate, or we need to work creatively around them. That's been really, really cool to see, you know, some of the obstacles that these new businesses have had to overcome as far as making a space that is awesome and making a business that's great within a pre-existing building that sometimes wasn't really designed for what you want to do with it.
Right.
So that's another pastime of mine, just exploring the old buildings and the new businesses and the various types of people in downtown LA. I'm a huge fan still. And food, and yeah, like you said, watching musicians do their thing. That's really fun.
And is that where you get, like, where do you get all of your inspiration from? Is there kind of like, what's your muse?
My muse is all around. It's personal stories from people that I engage with, or it's personal narratives that I watch from afar. But I do think it's not so much political. It's really this personal, this human thing that, you know, I watch and see the way that different people handle different things. And that's something that's in, you know, all of my songs. And that's something that I've managed to coax out of all of the Ming and Ping work as well, the Ming and Ping music.
Now, if someone wanted to hear your music, how could they do that?
You can Google Ming and Ping on the internet. I guess search for it. You don't have to use Google. Or Ming and Ping has a website called mingandping.com, M-I-N-G and P-I-N-G.
Now, did you all get started, like when you think about how technology has evolved, MySpace at one point was like the major place for music to be seen and be heard. How did you start to build your audience?
So way back in the day, 2002, 2003, 2004, when all of that stuff was kind of just re-emerging from the dot-com bust, and Ming and Ping was one of the first kind of weird internet oddities that popped up that that was, I guess, viral, but, you know, not to like a mega million people viral. Maybe, I don't know. But using my design sensibilities, I had these twins, Ming and Ping, do kind of a key image, a product image, basically, of these twins holding hands, like these grown-ass men.
Like co-joined.
Yeah, you know, and that's totally cool in Asia. Like, people walk down the street holding hands all the time. But I knew that in the U.S. that was, like, kind of weird. So I was like, let's do this. Let's shoot a photo of these two grown-ass men holding hands and, like, looking like they're straight out of the 80s. So we put that on the internet with about two or three songs, and I think that was a strong enough identity that it began to get passed around on the internet, which, you know, wasn't as saturated as it is now. And I think I have to credit a lot of my friends who also make snowboarding, skateboarding videos, who said, hey, these songs have a good energy. Let's put them on our videos and try to expose them to more people. And so I think a couple of those things really contributed to how that took off.
Fantastic. Now, how do you get the word out for the Juicy Kids?
I've been so lucky. I mean, I guess the Ming and Ping brand, I consider a pretty successful brand. Juicy Kids, really, I used all of the skills that I had accumulated over the past, you know, 10, 15 years, design-wise, and I just put my best foot forward, and I was at some kind of, like, startup meetup or something, and the keynote speaker was a guy named Noah Kagan, who runs this program called AppSumo. He's actually doing pretty well now with all his various things. But one of the things that he was speaking about was this idea that you have for a startup, don't perfect it, don't try to perfect it. Go home, put something out, and test it with a smaller audience. Test it with your friends. If your 20 friends like it, there's probably like 20 million people who are just like them. So literally the next day I went home and I put something on the internet.
Juicy Kids.
With some of our product photos. And I was like, hey friends, check this out. I want to make this a real business. It's not yet, but you guys are going to make this into a real business. And they totally did. They really helped. You know, they passed the word around. Some of them bought stuff. Or people just were really supportive because they knew that I was into it. I think that's... We discount the power of, like, our own circle sometimes.
Right.
Like, we forget that, like, our 20 friends have 20 more friends, you know?
Oh, that's so smart. I mean, you're right. I mean, a lot of people would, like, come out going, okay, I want to start something online, and I've got to go reach out to every blogger out there that has anything to do with plants and see if they'll write about me and promote me and do all of those things. And not to say that maybe you didn't do that as well or don't do that now or or have thought about it or any of that, but just the fact of really starting with your core. And mm-hmm. and I really like that idea of testing it out.
Well, there's a catch to that. It's that you've got to learn and put effort into making everything presentable and digestible. Mm-hmm. If you just puke out, you know, all of your ideas on a page and it's awful looking and nobody wants to, like, sort through it.
Right.
It's not going to reach anyone because nobody has the attention span for that.
Right.
So I guess what I've learned in design school and just being a creative design career is to discard everything that's not relevant or not super important, you know, and put everything up front that's the most important information. So if you are going to test with a small audience, like, or a big audience, like, you've got to dial down what your idea is and communicate it in a brief, catchy way, you know.
Great advice. Thank you so much for being on our show today and sharing your knowledge and expertise and just what it's like for you as an entrepreneur and how you've been able to navigate the waters of doing multiple things and enjoying life in the process. So thank you so much for being a part of the show today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me here.